Welcome, everybody, to the second episode of the NFL Weekly Recap. We are in week number three. We'll be recapping week number three. I have with me my number one Josh Allen fan, Joe Matz, which, you know, it's not just you, Joe, because Corey and Ronnie are going to hear it on Sunday. The return of greatness. Dominating the top 10 defense from 2020, apparently. My God, Josh Allen. How you doing, Joe?
I'm good. Despite my Giants and the return of Josh Allen, I'm still doing pretty well today.
So we will do a recap, because we were talking about calling the show,
Yeah, Beats and Geeks.
Yeah, something like that. And, of course, Vince shot it down. I'm pretty sure somebody was like, Geeks? I thought the shit was catchy. I don't care what y'all think.
I liked it.
Yeah, right? But, anyway, your expertise is DFS. My weapon of choice is sports gambling. I did enter the arena in DFS this week, and I beat you. Oh, no, you beat me by, like, 0.2 of a point. You shouldn't even be on the show. You owe me $20.
It was a rough week all around. That was going to probably be the lowest score to win that contest all year, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it was pretty tough, and it's my first time doing it. So I listened to the podcast, but I just wanted to be contrarian and not give you guys the satisfaction knowing that I took your picks. But I probably should have took your picks, because then I probably would have won. What was your most disappointing DFS pick this week?
Me personally, especially just the way I ended up playing, was Justin Fields, because for people who don't listen to the fantasy pod, Keith and I each give three players at each position, and two of the quarterbacks I recommended were Matt Stafford and Justin Herbert, who both went off, and then the third guy, who I put in half my lineups, was Justin Fields, and that was about as bad as it could get without having a turnover. He was cheap, so hopefully he didn't murder anyone's lineups, but it was horrific to watch. And I thought the Browns defense would get some sacks. I didn't think they'd get 9 of them. And I assumed Fields would at least give us like a rushing touchdown or something. But man, that was just brutal.
And it was funny, because I text you guys and was like, I can't believe you played Justin Fields this week after all that I said about him. And I was like, I'm the Nagy expert. And then I was directing that at you. And then Keith responded and was like, dude, I didn't put him in many of my lineups. I was like, oh, Keith, how dare you?
It got worse. It got worse. Yes,
it did. But yeah, and we'll definitely touch base on that. I, in DFS, had the Browns defense just because I figured he would struggle. Obviously didn't foresee 9 sacks either.
Yeah.
But it was quite a game for the Browns defense. It's not even a bad beat. Just the worst gambling pick I had this week, and probably the worst gambling pick that many people had, because I don't think a lot of people saw this coming. I had the Steelers at -3 to beat the Bengals, and then they missed the cover by about 20 points. The Bengals ended up winning 24-10. Ronnie bumped my Joe Burrow needs Sewell post. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase is incredible right now. It's one thing I think a lot of people don't realize about me, and I'll keep it moving after this, but I typically pick good people to hate on. I pick Patty Mahomes to hate on in that draft class. I pick Ja'Marr Chase this class. So if you find somebody that I'm hating on that's a first-round pick, they're more than likely going to be amazing.
I was going to say, weren't you hating on Justin Jefferson a little bit?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I had Hamler over him, actually. I said I'd take KJ.
Ooh, no.
And Jerry Jeudy. I stand by Jerry Jeudy, goddammit. Jerry Judy's my guy. But, if I hate on him, then by all means, they're going to be amazing. Now, I will say, too, that I did boost Joe Burrow when he came out. So I'm at least 1-3. But, yeah, Ja'Marr Chase ate them up. And then even more telling was the comment by Tyler Boyd after the game, basically saying that the Steelers quit. He basically called them pussies.
Damn.
Which I know that it was tough to hear, because the Bengals have been dominated by the Pittsburgh Steelers since Ben Roethlisberger became their quarterback, literally dominated. And to hear a Bengals player talk shit like that really is the beginning of the end for the Steelers franchise.
That was a game that I was wary of, just because going into the season, I had a hunch. Well, I mean, if you watched last year, Ben looked like he was washed, and I think we have confirmation now. It's fucking done.
And now I'll give this confession. I am on the preseason NFL podcast with Keith saying that the Steelers would be lucky if they went 8 to 9 games.
Yeah,
and I was like really critical of them, and it was like my bold prediction, and here I am 0-2 betting for them. But it was the Raiders and the Bengals. I counted those as wins. God damn it.
Well, they fooled us by beating the Bills week one. It was
I gotta blame Josh Allen for that too. But let's go ahead and do our recap for week three. Week three started with the Carolina Panthers going into Houston to take on Davis Mills and the Texans, a little short staff Texans. Yeah. Panthers won 24-9. The storyline there is that they lost Christian McCaffrey for some time. Not sure how long, but should people start being concerned, fantasy owners and just fans alike, be concerned about his availability?
I mean, considering especially like what he costs, whether – regardless of what kind of draft you're in, if it's an auction, you probably spent $70 on him. If it's, you know, if it's Snake, he was probably pick number one. So when you have to pay that much of a premium to get a guy, and this is the second straight year where he's going to miss at least a month of the season, yeah, I think you have to be very concerned.
Yeah, and I'm going to use this opportunity to once again advocate for a change in how running backs are paid. A lot of these guys get their best years knocked out of them during their rookie contracts. And then when they finally do get their money, everybody's like, oh, he's washed because, well, you fucking used them up. You know, the shelf life of a good running back that's not named Derrick Henry is typically 2 to 3 years. And when they get paid that fourth or fifth year, they're pretty much done by then. And it's really the high usage guys. And I had done this whole rant on this a few years back about how Zeke was over 30%, Le'Veon Bell was over 30%, and fucking McCaffrey was like in the low 40s. Like, that's just an insane amount of usage. And yep. I was using passing and running plays because these are dual threat running backs. And then in Zeke's case, he's even in there to block at times. And so he's really taken a beating. And it's not surprising that these guys are no longer any good once they get paid because they're all used up. So I personally think that running backs, when they come in as rookies, should get more money up front or larger contracts. Maybe even consider just giving them a general, maybe go 1 or 2 years and then give them like an actual contract so they can at least get 2 decent years of usage out of them, as well as it being meaningful that they get paid. Because at this rate, nobody's going to get paid at this position here soon.
No, not if teams are smart. I mean, that's another reason I need Dave Gettleman fired, is before he can give Saquon a 4-year, $80 million extension. So
poor Saquon. That injury sucks. The surprising but not really shocking result, the Los Angeles, I keep wanting to say San Diego, Los Angeles Chargers go into Kansas City and beat the Chiefs outright, 30-24. The storyline on the field was that the Chiefs' offense just kind of seemed out of sync, especially early in the game. They just didn't have it going. As a matter of fact, I can't recall a time in the Patty Mahomes era where they didn't score in the first quarter, or hell, they only had 3 points in the first half.
I was going to say the only other game I remember like that was their first AFC Championship against the Patriots.
Against the Patriots? Okay, yeah. I was going to say that might be the one that came to mind as well. And then they came out in the second half and really brought it to him. Story off the field, obviously, is the health of Andy Reid, which I'm hearing that he's in stable condition. Not sure exactly what happened. I love Andy Reid. He's a great offensive mind. Great for the game. The only coach that we have to balance the force that was Belichick, honestly. He let me down one time. He let me down one time, but he came through the second time, which was unfortunate as well because he beat my goddamn team. But I was happy for Andy. If anybody deserved to win a Super Bowl as a coach, it was definitely him. So I'm glad he's in better spirits and healthy. I look at this game, and I mean, Edwards-Helaire had 100 yards on the ground, averaged 5.9, had 17 carries. Kelce had 104 receiving yards, but Patty only 260 yards. And then the real issue is the two turnovers, man. Like, should Eric B and Andy have a sit down with Patty and just tell him, you know, stop the swag, man. Just get back to the basics. Like, because he's out there still trying to do no-look passes and stuff like that, which
right. It's
cool when it's successful, but it's just like one of those things where I think we've kind of, especially with them losing two games in a row, they need to dial it back and get back to what was Kansas City Chiefs football, which is their offense. They really need their offense.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, also, they obviously had the two lost fumbles, too, from Tyreek and Helaire. Mm-hmm. So, if you lose the turnover margin by four, you tend not to win games, as we all know. But yeah. I think it's also a good example of kind of knowing your opponent. Like, Brandon Staley's whole defensive philosophy is about limiting big plays.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to, like, force the other team to take the small chunks over and over again and have to work their way downfield. And Mahomes just has to be able to just be like, okay, I'll do that. That's what Aaron Rodgers did last year against the Rams in the playoffs, which was Staley's defense. He just marched it downfield, made smart plays over and over again, didn't force the issue. And that's what Mahomes has to know. That's what you have to do against this team, especially when it's a team that played them tight last year. I mean, they won last season, I believe, in Kansas City, right? I think the Chiefs might have been resting guys, but like, this is a team that played them twice last year, really tight. So you can't be making mistakes against a team like the Chargers, or maybe any team in this division now.
Yeah, and one thing that I had talked about in my rant this morning, and I was saying that I wanted to see the 49ers do yesterday, and it's what I see people do to the Chiefs a lot now, because the Ravens did it as well. They stop blitzing, and they just send whatever they have up front. If it's a three-man front or four-man front, they send them, and they drop everybody back into coverage, and they essentially force you into dinking and dunking. And I think a lot of people like Patty Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers they're so used to the big plays, they have to adjust to taking what a team is giving them. Because, I mean, let's be real, man. If you got 7-8 people in coverage covering 50 yards of space, that's easy to do, no matter who you got running around. And you can only block for so long with a guy like Joey Bosa rushing you. The Niners can do that because they got a guy like Nick Bosa.
Just have a Bosa.
Yeah, just have a Bosa. Or hell, even a Myles Garrett, honestly, which...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was just overkill. We'll get to that. But that was overkill yesterday. But when you have these premier rushers, you can't afford to do that. And I think that's a strategy that I've seen a lot of over the last year and a half of teams using, because the old mentality was, well, if we're going to get beat, we might as well just rush them, like send more people, like don't give them enough time. But guys are so, like, the way these rub routes are done now, the mesh concept is so prevalent in the passing game that just sending pressure isn't enough anymore. Like, especially when you got guys who create separation with an instant move, like a quick first step, like a Tyreek Hill, he's already open if you run it man to man. So, and we saw the poor Bucks get abused by that yesterday with DeSean Jackson. Like, he's open off the line immediately. So you just sending pressure just isn't the wave right now. You kind of have to mix it up. Shout out to Corey Carlton for giving out Mike Williams as a play yesterday for his favorite DFS play. Dude had 7 receptions, 122 yards. He gave that out on the Sunday kickoff show. I wish I had to listen once again, but no, instead I followed him on the 49ers play, and well, we'll get to that too.
But yeah, about Mike Williams, looking like a mistake for the Chargers not to pick up that fifth-year option right now.
Yeah, they're going to regret that, but looking like a win for him once he hits the market, man.
He's
a stud. A game that is, I mean, we got to talk about it, even though the result wasn't that expected. What the hell is Cliff Kingsbury doing, man? This guy tried to kick a 68-yard field goal in Jacksonville. Like, when I heard 68 yards, I was in the kitchen getting ready to put some burgers on the grill. I heard 68 yards, and I'm thinking, dang, man, they wilding out there in Mile High, 68 yards. Like, who was their kicker? And I come back, and it's Prater, only in Jacksonville. The hell?
Right.
So, naturally, the ball lands a yard short, and you get a 109-yard return for a touchdown. Absolutely goofy. If it was anybody other than Jacksonville, that would probably have been the reason why they lost the game. But it's Jacksonville, and the Cardinals ended up winning. Kyler Murray didn't have a great game. 316 yards, but he didn't even have a passing touchdown. He just had a rushing touchdown. James the Vulture Connor ruined my
ruined everyone. Roster.
Yeah, but AJ Green got off 112 yards finally. Still some growing pains from my guy Trevor Lawrence. One of these interceptions was not his fault. It went directly off of the tight end's hands or the receiver's hands. James Robinson finally got involved in the game. It looks like Urban Meyer realized he had a decent running back. And he had 15 carries for 88 yards, averaging almost 6 yards a carry. Actually, if you look at their rushing yards, both backs averaged over 5.5 yards. So that was pretty good. But the second interception by Trevor Lawrence on the flea flicker was
just... The flea flicker, well, I just laughed when I saw it. I just laughed. It was awful.
We're seeing too many flea flickers and like unnecessary like reverse plays running the NFL. Like I get that in college, but it really only works for McVay and Kyle Shanahan. Like I'm tired of seeing other people trying these plays. I'm like, you didn't execute it right. It just doesn't work for you. So let it go. The Jags still haven't gotten a win. I feel like the more we wait on this win, the closer Urban Meyer gets to a heart attack. So I'm hoping they win soon.
Yeah, I think he might be getting some ideas from Andy Reid this week. Just to throw this out there, because I saw it, Edge Sports, they did their estimate on that 68-yard field goal was a 2.4% chance of going in.
That's higher than I expected. And honestly, he actually got it further than I expected, but too. Like,
no one should be kicking a 68-yard field goal unless it's, at minimum, you're either in Denver or you're in a dome. If you're outside, there's no reason to attempt that field goal.
Unless you've got one of those, like, Lambo Gus behind you or Soldier Field Gus.
Yeah, something insane.
It literally has to be behind you. Yeah, it was just the stupidest thing to do, but... I mean, it's Cliff, man. Like at this point,
he's got to do one move like that at least every single game. Just something insane.
The disappointing game that we're going to talk about here, Chicago Bears got absolutely demolished by the Cleveland Browns, 26-6. I have issues with NFL coaches who look unprepared. Nagy looked completely unprepared. I said it a little bit on the thread in the group, and I'll say it here on the air. You can't tell me that this offense was not the same Andy Dalton offense that Justin Fields was in. If you know Justin Fields and you know Andy Dalton, they are completely opposite spectrums of athletic ability and overall talent. Rookie Justin Fields has way more in his legs than Andy Dalton has ever had his entire career. And if you scheme it right, his arm talent is there too.
Yeah.
I don't understand why there was limited plays of him rolling out and passing, which we saw with Mitch Trubisky in the offense.
Right. I mean, Nagy knows how to do this. Why wasn't it there?
Yeah, it's literally the in offense from Andy Reid when he was in Philadelphia with Nick Foles and Deshaun Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, LeSean McCoy. That is the basis of this scheme. I didn't see any of that. And what we saw was a fucking rookie holding the ball for 6 seconds when he's only got 2 seconds of time. You got Myles Garrett, and then the Browns are being real assholes. They were actually blitzing him, and they didn't even need to do that. They could have just put Myles Garrett against the entire offensive line, and it would have been fine. They were doing some advanced fucking blitz schemes. I was like, is Greg Williams on the sideline still? This is cruel. And the kid gets hit and sacked. I don't even know how many times he got hit. He took 9 sacks, so he threw the ball 20 times. He probably got hit 16 times.
Yeah, his pressure rate for the game was 54%.
It was the worst coaching from an offensive-minded coach I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I hate on Jason Garrett every week as a Giants fan, he schemes up runs for Daniel Jones. It's like the most effective part of our offense usually.
Yeah.
If Jason Garrett is more creative than you are, you're fucked. It's over.
Yeah.
Like, also, Fields didn't attempt, and part of this is because of the pressure, but he didn't have one throw over 20 yards downfield. Not completion, throw.
And if they had to just run, like, short dink and dunk stuff, like, again, we hype up Patty Mahomes. We know what he can do. Patty throws the ball short a lot of times and lets his playmakers make runs. Like, Kelce and Tyreek Hill, like, if we looked at the scheme and took maybe 15 catches of theirs, I would say the majority of those catches are typically within 5 to 10 yards, and then they do the rest with yards after the catch. And that's how – that's what an effective offensive passing attack looks like. That's literally what Andy Reid has always done. He does the short routes. He runs the – like I said, the mesh concepts. He'll have the guys dragging across the field, getting in space if you want to play man-to-man. And then when you get comfortable and you come up or you try to sit in the zone, he beats you over the top with somebody with some speed. I mean, I don't know if the receiving core obviously has the makeup of that, but Marquise Goodwin is fast. You know, he can run over the top, yeah, stretch the field a little.
Mooney's fast.
Robinson is a legitimate receiver if you give him the goddamn ball.
I mean, you want to talk about people frustrated in daily or season-long fantasy? Anyone who's had Allen Robinson this year?
Yeah,
it's brutal. Awful,
and so I just saw on the ticker on the Monday night game that Andy Dalton and I think it was Nick Foles, whoever the third, like all three quarterbacks are in
play,
which is fucking stupid. And if people are going to blame Justin Fields for that, I will watch every single snap of all 22s for the Nagy era from now until the end of the season. I'll write a dissertation on how he fucking ruined us, because it is not Justin Fields' fault. And I'm not saying the kid didn't play bad, but it reminds me a lot of Dwayne Haskins in the sense that you have a coach who should be, like in his case, it was Jay Gruden. Jay Gruden knows offense, man. He knows the NFL. Scheme something for the kid. Help him out, man. Don't just fucking throw him out there like that. For one, that's dangerous to him, especially when he's getting smacked around like he's fucking Joe Burrow out here. But anyway, spent too much time on this game. It was a blowout. Brown still somewhat ass. Game of the week, obviously, was the Buffalo Bills dropping 43
on the game Washington of the week.
John Does. Oh, it's definitely game of the week. 43 on the Washington John Does.
Oh, God.
In case you missed it, Joe. Excuse me. Josh Allen was 32 for 43, 358 yards, 4 touchdowns, and a rushing touchdown. So if you're keeping track, that's 5 touchdowns. So if they scored 43 points, he had 35 of those 43. Just want to put that out there.
He played all right. He was okay.
Yeah, he's a little bit, you know.
I mean, against that trash defense, everyone looks good, so.
No. I was gonna clown Daniel Jones, but he didn't do too bad. He just lost.
The truth is, with this Washington defense, if you protect, you can light him up. That secondary has looked awful this year.
I'm gonna try to find. I believe that something's wrong with this like defensive line, man. Like, do they not have inside moves? I don't know if I'm the only person that just consistently watches the line when I watch games. Like, I probably spend 85% of my time watching the trenches. I hate to be that guy, but that's just what I'm into.
No, I love it.
Chase Young does not do inside moves this year, or he hasn't. He hasn't shown it to me. Every fucking snap that I watch when I'm keying in on him, he just gets rode out of the play, and he just goes too far out wide, and the quarterback just steps up and makes a pass. Like, there's no inside move. And then I was like, maybe I'm tripping. And so I watched Nick Bosa, because they do have similarities, the Bosas and Chase Young. They were all coached basically by the same person. And Nick Bosa and Joey Bosa, when they start to get pushed out or rode out, they fight back in. Like, there's some hand movement. There's like some kind of like, well, I call it the Reggie White, like shoulder shove. We get under the pass and you kind of get the big guy off his like a little lopsided, and then they'll mix it up. So they'll go, like, matter of fact, in the Eagles game, Nick Bosa did this. He went outside 2-3 plays on the third down when it was like an automatic passing down. He knew Hurts was going to have to pass. He took 3 steps outside. When the guy went outside, he cut back in, and he took him off balance. And that the tackle for the Eagles is huge. He's like 6'7", like 360. But he's a big guy. He got him off balance, fought back inside. So it was either hold or allow the sack. He chose the hold. Chase Young has that ability. Like, he's got the footwork. He's got the brute strength. But it's like, dude, I'm wondering, are you trying? Like, I just personally don't see effort in the stats. Like, it just doesn't line up. Like, I pick on Primetime Mac all the time. Like, Khalil Mack plays when he wants to play. But when he wants to play, it's fucking incredible, and he can't be stopped. Right. I have yet to see Chase Young show me this year, like, that he wants to play type thing. Like, I just don't see a lot of fight coming across people's face. Like, it's like, if I can't beat you with my first step and get around you, I don't know if it's like the scheme they're asking him to just keep like a contain or what. I can't
imagine they're just asking Chase Young.
Well, they do have a scheme where they just leave a hole open that Daniel Jones exploited when he was running. So I mean, honestly, I don't know. I'm definitely gonna go back and I'm probably gonna start that tonight, just looking at all 22s and just seeing if maybe I'm tripping or if it was just the couple plays that I watched. Cause I watched Sweat, I loved Payne when he came out of Alabama, so I was a big fan. I still watch him too, but I'm just like, these matchups that they're having, they're not premier tackles, man. Like, they should be giving me something, showing us something. And you can tell that the line's not playing good because they're what, 29th? In defense, that's all on the line. Like, they can't do anything without these boys up front. So I don't know.
I mean, I don't think this team's going to win any games where they get zero sacks, which is true. What happened yesterday. So
hard to sack greatness. I
He is hard to catch. I'll give him that. He's definitely hard to catch. Even when he was bad, he was hard to catch.
I don't recall him being bad, but we'll discuss that. Not so shocking result, but shocking that Carson Wentz finished the game. The Indianapolis Colts traveled to Tennessee and lost 25-16. Ryan Tannehill, man. Like, I know Ronnie's going to – if Ronnie listens to the show, this I will just fucking say it. It's directed to you. Let's give up on this guy, man. He's not good. He's not good. Like, I'm sick of it. Derrick Henry is the only reason why they win games. If he can't get over 100 yards rushing – They're a 500 team at best.
I think you're underselling Tannehill a little bit. Like, yeah. I know he had the two picks. I don't think they were entirely his fault. He didn't have AJ Brown basically that entire game.
It's Julio Jones.
Right, well, that's it. Who else did they have? There's a reason. What didn't Derrick Henry have? Like, he's had like the most catches in a 2-game stretch the last 2 weeks that he's ever had.
When Matt Ryan had just Julio Jones, he almost won. I mean, come on, man. Like, Julio.
He had Kyle Shanahan calling plays that year. That's a little bit different than whoever the Titans guy is. It was their tight ends coach last year. Like, we don't know.
Their offensive coordinator became a head coach. Apparently, when that happens, the next guy up is a guru. So I'm expecting big things. Obviously didn't see it. Maybe it's because I didn't fully watch the game. I do know the Colts defense can be stingy, but I'm just not impressed with somebody going 18 for 27, 197 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. You shouldn't have 2 interceptions if you're just checking down. And you have to be just checking down if Julio only has 47 yards and Nick Westbrook only has 53 yards.
Julio only saw 4 targets. Like, he's not going to get a ton of yards.
So then you must be checking down if Julio ain't seeing targets, because Julio down the field. So who you throwing to?
That's my point. There's no one else on this team. That's why it's hard.
I'm confident.
My issue with this game is with Frank Reich, where this game was pretty close, like, most of the way. They lost by 9. Why is Carson Wentz throwing 37 passes and Jonathan Taylor got 10 runs? He ran for 64 yards in those 10 runs. Why is he not the offense right now?
That sounds like Sean McDermott Singletary type stuff right there. Like, the guy gets 5 yards a carry and you only give him the ball 14 times. But if he's getting 2 yards a carry, you're running 30 times. That just makes complete sense. I don't know. Looking at the box score, it was 14-10 at the half. And then the Colts got 3 points in the third quarter. So it was 14-13 going into the fourth quarter. And so, yeah, that's a close game. I'm not sure why they decided to pass. If maybe it was situational stuff, they got behind the sticks often. But if you get 6 yards a carry, that shouldn't happen either. So I'm not sure what his explanation for that was.
Yeah, and I usually like him. I think he's a pretty good coach. But I think that was bizarre yesterday.
Yeah, the walls are closing in a little on the Colts, man. Starting out 0-3, it ain't going to get much easier for them as the season goes on. So they need to tighten up. And that's not a pun. Saints visiting the Patriots. Caught a lot of slander from my boy, Famous Jameis. But you know what? It doesn't matter. He won. He's 2-1. Not sure why the sports books keep, like Corey said, people need to update their rosters, man. Tom Brady is no longer in New England. They should not be favored in games like this. I don't know why they keep getting favored in games like this. Matter of fact, the only game they should have been favored so far was the game against the Jets. But they have been favored right at home against the Dolphins, and they were favored at home against the Saints. I'm not sure. If I catch them favorite next week against the Buccaneers, I'm calling shenanigans.
I'm just going to bet my life savings on that if they're favored. But
Mac Jones looked human.
Yeah, I mean, as we've seen, that's been a trend in my daily fantasy picks when I'm picking defenses. You just fade the rookie QBs this year. And, I mean, Mac Jones has been the only one who's generally looked competent most of the time. But, I mean, this Saints defense is good. I mean, we saw what they did to Aaron Rodgers. There was obviously, I don't know what else was going on with the Packers that day, but this is a legitimately top 10 defense, and they're going to give people trouble. I am not, nor have I ever been a Jameis believer, but this team's going to probably stay in the playoff hunt all season because of this defense.
I will admit there was a play where Jameis did the little turn spin Eli throw, and it was a touchdown, and I made a post about it jokingly saying last week that was an interception, and Sean Payton definitely pulled them to the side and was like, dude, cut that shit out right now. Like, don't do it, because they were on like the 10-yard line, and he did that, and it was, I think it was towards the end of the first half, so it could have potentially been a turnover. Mac Jones had 3 interceptions, but to me the alarming thing is he threw 51 times. Again, they were down 21-6 at some point in the third quarter, but still, that's way too many times for a rookie. You don't want your rookie throwing 51 times. I don't care who he is.
I mean, this is another one where it's just like, Mac Jones also tied for the team lead in rushes and actually led the team in rushing yards. If he's getting 21 yards of rushing from the rest of the team, this is another one where it's just like, you're not going to win games. It's just not going to happen.
This just end. The Philadelphia Eagles season is officially over. Over. Welcome back to reality, people. Just beating the Falcons by 30 does not mean you're good. Speaking of the Falcons, that is our next game. I know you don't really want to touch on this too long, so we'll speed through it. Falcons beat the Giants 17-14. Not sure what the hell is going on in New York other than they're just not good. I want to fuss at you for defending overlooking Mekhi Parsons, or Micah Parsons, however you say his name. I'm very disappointed in you for that. And the Giants just need some help everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we scored 14 points against the Falcons, which is outside of what the Bears did, that's as embarrassing as it gets on offense.
Yeah.
And Daniel Jones didn't even play poorly. I thought he played fine. It wasn't great, but it was good. He didn't turn the ball over. Evan Engram immediately came back and tried to ruin my life by fumbling on our side of the field because he's a turnover machine for whatever reason. Joe Judge drove me crazy. He challenged a play where if the challenge had worked, we would have had the ball at our own 25-yard line off of a fumble. It would have been a fumble if he'd won the challenge. We lost the challenge, and the Falcons punted to us because it was 4th and 10. He challenged a play that resulted in a 4th and 10 for the Falcons to try to get the ball at our own 25-yard line. Just an insane waste of a challenge and then a timeout. It's just boneheaded decisions by him, Jason Garrett, not calling an interesting game. Yeah, we're going to go like 3-14, and I hope we just uproot everything and start over. For the Falcons, I find it bizarre that Arthur Smith seems to be the first guy who's figured out how to use Cordero Patterson in an offense.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he can't seem, outside of like one key play towards the end, can't seem to figure out Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts should have gone off in this game. I don't understand why he didn't.
I took Kyle Pitts in DFS. Yeah. Assuming he was going to go off.
Was in half my lineups. Like, yeah. As a Giants fan, he should have destroyed us. I don't understand it.
Yeah. I was very perplexed by that. I thought at one point he was hurt because he didn't have any stats. I was like, is he on the field? But yeah, he was out there, and I don't know, man. But I mean, it's probably some growing pains with the Falcons in general. New coach, new system, and he's learning players and things like that. So maybe as the season progresses, because I know he had, I think he was getting like 7 targets a game prior to this. So maybe it was just one of those things where the coach and the player just wasn't in sync this week. But yeah, Giants are 0-3, and all is right with the world, you know? And it's not anything against you personally. It's just against NFC East fans. That's Bengals.
I can, especially in the group, I can understand that perspective.
Bengals came into Pittsburgh, knocked on the door. Pittsburgh was like, who's that? They said the Raiders, kicked it in, and was like, psych, it's the Bengals, and beat their ass again. So, Bengals 24, Steelers 10. This is the end of an era, people. If you are a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, you have nobody to blame but yourselves as an organization. You should have been doing a transition plan for Big Ben about 2-3 years ago, for sure. Should have been the wheels rolling. I think Ryan Clark said something about the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade. Those were probably the picks, or that was the pick that you probably should have used to really get a quarterback of the future, because you need one. This defense is good when they're on the field and they're healthy. They are a good defense. They are arguably a top 10 defense. You've got weapons in your offensive arsenal. Right now, nothing's working in Pittsburgh because your quarterback isn't working, and you've been a franchise that is dependent on their quarterback to play at a high level for the last, 20 years? And he's just not able to do that anymore. Like, he looks awful. This is painful. This is like in the Disney movies where the young stud is sitting on the sideline and we got to watch the old guy just kind of go till, you know, he won't go anymore, and the coach pulls him to the side and tells him he wants him to be a mentor. Like, that's what we're looking at right now. Like, Ben needs to be a mentor. Instead of telling Mason Rudolph you don't get the playbook, you need to sit down with him and go over the plays, because you're done. Like, it's pathetic. It's pathetic. They can't do anything right. They Najee Harris led them in receiving, and he only got
14 receptions. It's insane.
Because Ben can't throw the ball anywhere.
The best was when they had, like, in the fourth quarter, I think they're at like the 25 or something of the Bengals. It's 4th and 10. And Ben just takes like 2 steps, throws it 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage to Harris, who gets tackled for no gain on 4th and 10. I think Ben gave up.
Yeah, Najee's pissed, man. You can tell every time he gets hit, he runs into the walls and stuff. He's just like, dude, because, I mean, think about it, man. Ben can't throw the ball further than 10 yards. What's the point of not loading the box? Like, it's bad.
And the O-line is also bad. So Harris is just screwed every which way.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I think even franchises might be fooling themselves because of Tom Brady, where he's 44. He, you know, obviously this week wasn't a banner week for him, but he still looks like Tom Brady. But the reality is, Tom Brady is like one of the healthiest guys. Like, he had one major injury and missed a season, and otherwise he's pretty much clean every year. Roethlisberger is like the most beat up quarterback of the last 20 years. Like, he played through a lot of it, but he was always hurt. There's always something wrong. And when you take that every single season, you're not going to reach 40 and be good. And he wasn't good last year.
No, he wasn't. I said something about this last year, and I'll say it again. They didn't give us enough information about that injury to his arm, like, or shoulder, whatever he had going on, or it was the elbow. I think it was the elbow. But his throwing motion has changed. I said that last year. I was like, something's off about how he throws the football now. And I'm assuming it's because of the surgery. And if that's the case, then, you know, he can't do it anymore. And that's perfectly fine. But to put him out here with this team and waste his defense is just whatever. They'll learn. And honestly, it couldn't have happened to a better franchise than the assholes in Pittsburgh, because they love to tell you about their 6 Super Bowls. So have fun with that.
And I also want to remind Steelers fans that the NFL existed before the Super Bowl did, and so did your team, and they were awful. Like, the true measurement should be like championships 2 years played, and the Steelers are behind a number of franchises if you do it that way, rather than just counting up what Terry Bradshaw did for 10 years, or more accurately, what Chuck Knoll did for 10 years.
Immaculate reception was really on the ground. Anyway, switching over to a game that we will cover in our last segment as well. Ravens and the Lions. Ravens won 19-17. We would not be a good show if we didn't bring up the fact that history was made as Justin Tucker made a 66-yard field goal, and it was the most dramatic Justin Tucker way. The ball hit the bottom of the upright in the front and bounced up and then went in. Like, from the angle that they showed on TV, I couldn't tell if it was good or what. I thought, like, it maybe doinked out. And I was thinking to myself, well, it's Justin Tucker. God wouldn't even do Justin Tucker like that. And sure enough, it went in. And so, I mean,
honestly, the first time I saw it, I thought it was, like, landing in the end zone. Yeah. I couldn't tell that it doinked off. I was like, oh, it went way short. And then, like, it's in.
Yeah, there's nothing he can't do, man. Amazing. Apparently. Amazing guy. Unfortunate that he's from Texas, but nevertheless, yeah. That's the only, negative. Yeah, the only negative I got against him. A game that we won't even bother covering too long. Broncos beat the Jets 26-0. Jets suck. Raiders Dolphins. A really interesting game. The Tua-less Dolphins traveled to Las Vegas to take on the undefeated Raiders. It started like it might go bad for the Raiders. I think they had a pick six. They went down 14-0 pretty quickly. And then they came back. And then somehow the Dolphins came back. I look for some issues with coaching here, but I can't really say that it was just two teams playing well. Ended up going into overtime. Raiders won by 3.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what Carr was doing on that first pick, but
yeah, me either.
After that, he played well. I mean, he keeps racking up the yardage right now. He had 386 yesterday. Peyton Barber, of all people, looked great. So that's confusing. But, yeah, I think this is kind of just – this feels like the destiny of the Dolphins this year, where it's just going to be – they're going to be in almost every game, but they're not going to win that many of them. So I think, you know, they really overachieved each of the last 2 years. And this is kind of the come back to the middle season for them.
The Las Vegas Raiders had 497 total yards of offense yesterday.
Yeah.
Good God. And they only won by 3. I don't know how to explain that. I watched the whole game. I don't know. But shout out to Gruden, man. I mean, you can teach an old dog new tricks, apparently. He has adjusted just fine to today's game. Got to give him credit. I've been low on Derek Carr, and he's been playing well. Even the interception was just one of those things where I'm just not sure what he was looking at. Maybe I don't honestly the way the linebacker picked it, he might not have seen him. He might have just like
that would make sense based on how that play went.
He literally threw it right to him, so I don't think he's seen him. But either way, shout out to that Las Vegas Raiders team, 3-0. Everybody's happy there except for the people in Oakland. The real game of the week, the game that I was so happy to see, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers visited the Los Angeles Rams. God, I was about to say Las Vegas. It's too much. The Los Angeles Rams, a game that I picked as my best bet on my podcast, just seemed like a logical spot to fade the Buccaneers, and they didn't disappoint. The crazy stat here. Tom Brady, 41 for 55, 432 fucking yards, and he lost by 10. That's insane. I don't like this guy. I wish he'd retire. He might be Benjamin Button in real life. We really need to investigate him. He seems to get better with age.
Yeah, if you told me, though, that Tom Brady was going to throw 55 passes for 432 yards and only have one touchdown, I don't think I don't think I would have believed you. That's a granted, they did like a run to Chris Godwin and stuff that was a little different, but I was with you actually on this one where I don't gamble quite as much on a just outside of fantasy just because it's burned me in the past. Mm-hmm. But I always do my ESPN little fantasy picks, and I took the Rams in this one too. I thought, you know, if you're giving me the Rams as home dogs against anyone in the NFL, I'm going to take the Rams, and they did not disappoint. Matthew Stafford looks like exactly what they traded for. Like, this is what they wanted out of him.
Matthew Stafford looks like me and Corey said he looked when he was in Detroit, but people like Ronnie will lie to y'all and confuse y'all and say that he's trash. That's all I'm saying.
No, I was a doubter when he came into the league.
Of course you were.
You know me, the big arm guys who the stats don't like, I'm always out. You're in.
Yep.
And this is one of the two, at least, that you were correct on.
Yeah.
But I will say I was in on the move here. I was like, and it's the more of the preseason went on, I started thinking about it. Just like, yeah, Matthew Stafford's fucking good. Sean McVay's good.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Let me see if I have the number here. Let's see. I don't have the number, but I know that like I think it was like the lowest percentage of play action passes that McVay's called in like 3 years or something. Like, he doesn't feel the need to have to just cater around Stafford's limits because Stafford doesn't really have a lot of limits.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think it was smart against this defense. Just like, don't be holding the ball extra long. Only one sack by the Bucs in this game, which I believe was the only time they actually knocked Stafford down this whole game. And that's going to work against this Bucs D. The strength of the defense is their line. They also have, by the end of the game, they're out two of their top three cornerbacks, which is a problem if you're up against Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Van Jefferson. And as we saw a couple times in that game, DeSean Jackson still is really fast.
Who is this guy? And it's like, it's DeSean Jackson. I was like, what? I forgot they got him.
Right? He's the fourth receiver on this team.
Yeah.
And he had 120 yards and three touchdowns. And if Stafford had been able to step into one more throw, it would have been another like 50-yard touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was terrorizing this Bucs team. What I wonder for you is, do you think this game is like representative, like if these teams see each other again in the playoffs, or is it kind of like Saints Bucs turned out last year where you could just kind of throw a lot of it out?
Yeah, you could throw a lot of it out, man. AB didn't play.
That's what I think too.
Yeah, AB didn't play. Travel schedule's a little funky as well. I would throw it out. Also, typically this early in the season, teams are still, believe it or not, still working off some rust because they didn't do much of a preseason. So in the case of like two talented teams like this, I would anticipate that the next game will be a lot closer, and especially with the addition of AB, who means a lot to that system, a lot to Tom Brady. And then, you know, Gronk's health also will probably play a big factor into that as well. But one of the things that, you know, they have to figure out is they need to find a running game.
Zero running game yesterday. Yeah.
Fun stat, Tom Brady led the team in rushing yesterday. Three carries for 14 yards, 4.7 yards a carry, and he led the team in passing. I would argue that that's probably the first time in his career that's ever happened.
I would believe it. It's, yeah, I mean, 14 yards led the team.
He was I can't even say it. Tom Jackson. What in the world, man? Lamar is jealous. If he can only throw for 400 yards.
All right, if he threw it 55 times, he might be able to. Yeah, he'd have a shot at it.
I think the most I've seen him do is like 300 and something in that playoff game.
One other thing I want to throw out in this game is a lot. And this is also though one of the reasons why I think it could be different next game is because now they'll have seen this. But Raheem Morris did a great job. Obviously, having Aaron Donald always helps because Aaron Donald looked unstoppable at times yesterday. Mm-hmm. But they had five players that had multiple pressures on Tom Brady. And one of those guys was Jalen Ramsey. They blitzed him four times, and he got pressure on three of those four blitzes. So he was scheming it up yesterday. And obviously, if Tom Brady's seen it now, and if he has Antonio Brown, things could play out differently. But That was a great game called by Raheem Morris yesterday.
Yeah, and if they got AB, I highly doubt he'll see a lot of Jalen Ramsey around the line of scrimmage. Which
yeah.
he was definitely in the mix yesterday. Had 7 tackles, second in the team actually with 7 tackles. So that was definitely a boost to that defense to have him be able to freely flow like he did. Second to last game, disappointing Seattle Seahawks. I hate them. I hate Pete Carroll. Visiting the Minnesota Vikings, I hate Zimmer. Vikings won 30-17. Honestly, a game that I just kept expecting the Seahawks to come back because that's usually what they do. And they started out fairly fast, and I don't know where it got away from them. What I'm starting to notice here is a lack of second half production. They didn't score at all in the second half this week. Last week, I do believe they only scored six. They scored 6. And that was with overtime included. So they've scored a total of 6 points in about 5 quarters of second half play so far. And that to me is alarming. You can't win games like that.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with them. Because the first half, first 3 drives, 17 points. And actually their 4th drive was a missed field goal. So like they're moving the ball. DK was destroying Patrick Peterson. And then the second half, 4 drives. They ran 19 total plays the entire second half and gained 96 yards. Again, against a defense that has not looked good in over a year. Like you said, it's a repeat more or less from last week against a Tennessee defense that also is not very good. So I haven't watched their game super closely, so I'm not sure if I don't know what Shane Waldron's calling, what the issue is there, if teams are making adjustments to the Seahawks in the second half, but this is a real problem. And I mean, I forget, they're playing someone in the division next week. It might be the Rams.
No, it's us.
Oh, it's the Niners. It's the Niners. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if you drop to 1-3 in this division, and especially if the Rams and Cardinals are getting wins too, like, this team could dig itself into a real hole that they cannot get out of.
Yeah, I said in our preseason show with Keith that the key to winning the West is what you do outside the division because it's a rock fight in the division. So if you come in and if you look at the Rams and the Niners and the Cardinals, they're coming in with 2-3 game lead on the Seahawks. I would anticipate Seattle splits with at least 2 of those 3 teams. I mean, that's typically how our division goes. And then, like, we beat the Rams, and then the Cardinals beat us, and then the Seahawks beat us, and then, you know, it's just like
this. Right,
like,
it's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, it's just wild like that. So they don't want to keep losing these out-of-division games. So, yeah, they're behind the 8-ball. If they struggle against us, and Tyler Lockett's out, I think. I think that's something that I didn't mention, but I'm pretty sure he got injured in the last game. So if they lose him and they have to play us, one of the big things that usually beats us is Tyler Lockett stretching the field on those busted plays. Right,
and now you just roll everything over to DK and just try to force someone else to beat you.
Yeah, well, and we know how DK does against Jalen Ramsey, so we can just count him out of that game. Disappointing game. I don't really want to talk about it, but we will. Packers visit the Niners. We lost 30-28. I guess I'll continue with my last rant. I hate poor game management. I hate Jimmy Garoppolo. and I hate pass interference calls, but they were warranted. It was a good game. I think, you know, Niners have nobody to blame but themselves. They started too slow. Should have got going early. Aaron Rodgers is just fucking fantastic. He's just such a great passer. Like, watching him and like, you know, when I sit and watch games, I try to figure out how I would try to be the team or how I would try to be the defense. And honestly, I would just pray. Like, Aaron Rodgers literally can put the ball anywhere he wants to put it, which is why when he has games like he had week 1, it just makes you wonder, was he trying? He's so good.
I don't understand that game at all. I mean, that first throw on that last drive, ridiculous. When they showed the replay and you could see it from more or less what he was able to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand how there's players that can make that throw. It's insane. Yeah. Like, throwing it over the underneath guys to get it. Because Adams isn't open when, like, he throws it, even remotely. Mm-hmm. And he gets it over those guys, fits it in perfectly. And then, I mean, honestly, on that last one, I got him in the field goal range. If I was San Francisco, I'm just like triple teaming Devontae Adams. I think it was like over 50% of the routes he ran, he got targeted on.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was out there, it was a better than 1 in 2 chance Rodgers going to throw to him.
Yeah, and I said that too in my rant this morning. Like, I just didn't understand, and maybe that some of that's because D'Amico Ryans is new to the defensive coordinator position.
Sure.
But I was like, he's got enough experience as a player; he should kind of know what to do situationally there. And I'm like, I would have. I mean, it sounds crazy, but some kind of bracket or form of a bracket around Devontae Adams to at least make him look somewhere else. Like, anybody but this guy is beating us here. And it just didn't happen. That was way too easy. And ultimately, that's what led to us losing the game when Crosby hit the field goal. We ran it on this last week. I will just go out and say it once again. If you're up 3 and it's that late in the game and you're past the 20-yard line and it's under 5 yards to go for first down, just fucking go for it on fourth down. There was absolutely no reason for the Packers to kick that field goal because they go up 6. You're still essentially
in a position to lose. Trash.
Yeah, you're still essentially in a position to lose.
This is one of those things where it's statistically proven, like, up 6 is, like, not half the advantage that people have it in their minds. Because as soon as – if you go up 3 – it's like the other team is thinking, oh, we only need to get 3. And so they end up being kind of conservative about it because they're worried, like, we don't want to turn the ball over here, especially probably if you've got Jimmy Garoppolo as your quarterback. Up 6, you just make the other team hyper aggressive. Like, they have to go for it on fourth downs. Like, it sounds like, oh, it's double the points. The other team has to score a touchdown, which, I mean, if the other team is like a total. If you're facing the Bears right now, sure, go up 6. But if you're facing a team with a competent offense, 6 is not worth as much as people think. And so I'm with you. Be aggressive there.
Yeah, it just didn't make any sense. Also, Kyle Shanahan punting in on 4th-and-1 when you're at midfield and down 2 scores to Aaron Rodgers is just a waste of time. Nope. And I'm disappointed. like Collinsworth and Al Michael said, What's the difference? He's still going to score. He went on an 18-play drive and still scored the touchdown. You could have went for it on 4th-and-1 and just you have a better chance of probably making that 4th-and-1 than you had of stopping him from scoring a touchdown the next drive. It's the same outcome. Just
100%.
So stupid. And it's unfortunate that, you know, these guys still coach like that. I'm hoping it'll change. Update, Eagles scored 27-14 with – like 7 minutes left in the third quarter, I think, is what it's showing on my screen. But congratulations to them. Still going to lose. Switching over to our last two segments. We titled this, Somebody's O Has to Go. So I will ask you, Joe, which 3-0 team do you think will lose their first game? The Raiders, the Broncos, the Rams, the Cardinals, or the Carolina Panthers?
So I'll actually tell you that I think we miscommunicated a little bit on this one.
Okay.
Because the way I was looking at it was which one of these teams do I think is least likely to make the playoffs.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, there you go.
Although now you've got me looking at the schedule, seeing if I can figure this out too. But I think I'm going to surprise people here because – I think that the obvious answer is the Carolina Panthers because they're the team I think everyone is most surprised is 3-0. They haven't played a great schedule. I'm going to say it's the Arizona Cardinals. And if they swap divisions, this would be an entirely different answer. But like you said, the NFC West is going to be a bloodbath. I do think Seattle will at least semi-figure their shit out. And so... you know, I think it's going to be a rough go. I'm not a Jameis believer. I like the Panthers more than I like the Saints. I think the Panthers defense is also surprisingly good beyond the fact that they've just haven't played that great of offenses. Again, they did destroy the Saints. They still have 2 games against the Falcons left. They still have to play the entire NFC East. So I think Carolina, I think they're going to, even with the McCaffrey loss, I think Carolina's going to make the playoffs. The Cardinals, I think it's like 50-50. So if I'm picking against one of these 3-0 teams, I'm going to go with Arizona.
I mean, Arizona.
Am I crazy?
No, because they haven't really shown much on defense. And one of the things, I know some people disagree with this method, but I used this method last year in gauging that the Steelers were overrated. If you don't cover the number a lot, even though you're winning, I consider you not to be as good as people expect. Because to me, covering the spread is showing that you are meeting expectations. And the odds makers in the NFL are probably some of the best people at gauging how good a team is. The Cardinals are one of those teams where they're just not good against the number. So to me, they win, they get by, but that only takes you so far. At some point, it catches up to you, and then you basically show your true colors. In the case of the Steelers last year, it caught up to them probably like towards the last like 3 or 4 weeks, where it was like, uh-oh, we're in trouble. Whereas everybody before that was like, oh, this seems good. Look at them. They're 12-0. And then all of a sudden they're 12-4, and then they're just struggling all the way into the playoffs. I think the Cardinals are kind of set up in the same fashion, where it's like they're going to win games and they're going to look good early on. But like as this season gets longer, it's going to catch up to them, and they're going to have their uh-oh moment towards the, like, in their case, probably by like week 7. They'll have their uh-oh moment, and they're really made of.
I will say, now looking at the week 4 schedule, we could see a lot of these teams go down. Arizona, to your point about whether or not they'll have their uh-oh moment, they're at the Rams next week.
Okay.
So that's happening right there. One of those teams is obviously going down. The Broncos get Baltimore in Denver. So that's a tough one for them.
Taking my points.
The Raiders are at the Chargers. So we could see a lot of these teams get knocked off. And then when we switch over to the 0-3 teams, Detroit is at Chicago. The Colts are at Miami. I do not think my Giants are going to win in New Orleans. But there's some winnable games there. And I will say that the 0-3 team, I think, that I'm not out on entirely yet is the Colts.
Yeah.
And that's, again, largely a product of the division that they're in. Tennessee is the only decent team in that division besides them. They have, you know, maybe the two worst teams in the NFL otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And again, yeah, they haven't played Houston and they haven't played Jacksonville, and they get those teams 4 times. If you win those 4, that puts you at 4-3 then. And then you've just got to go, what, over 500 the rest of the way, and get to 9-8. You've got a shot. So assuming Carson Wentz's ankles don't just completely shatter. And I believe Jacob Eason got overtaken on the QB depth chart. But because who'd they sign? The UCLA guy?
They had Sam Ellinger, I believe, from Texas.
They do have Sam Ellinger, yeah. And he's on IR.
So it's
what's his name from UCLA? Shoot, I can't remember his name right now.
It's not Rosen, is it? Or Rosen, is it?
Hundley. I'm pretty sure it was Hundley. I saw him on the side.
All right. I guess I would buy in on the Colts before I bought in on anybody else.
It's slim pickings otherwise.
Yes, Jets might not win a game.
Giants are gonna go like 1-8 to start the season.
Yeah.
So I've looked at this.
If Eli was still in New York, I would be taking the Giants because that was like his MO. But Lions can't get right. It is definitely some pickings. And then in our closing segment, I have a challenge flag for the NFL. If anybody caught the end of that Lions-Ravens game, it was an unfortunate disaster in the sense that I think it was the play that put the Ravens into field goal position for the 66-yarder should have never happened. It should have been a delayed game. And it was a rough miss. Obviously, in real time, nobody's catching that if you're watching, unless you're a Lions fan. But
I'm sure they were yelling.
Yeah, for the refs not to catch that was awful. And I will have to go back and look and see if any of the players even caught it. But if you missed it, essentially the play clock hit 0-0, and there was like a solid breath and a clap when Lamar got the ball. So it was a full second for sure that the clock was on zero, and he still got the playoff. And I want to say it was Hollywood Brown that caught the pass, and then they ended up in field goal position, made the 66-yarder, and then the rest is literally, no pun intended, history. Yep. And the worst part of that, and the reason why I'm throwing the challenge flag, the worst part of that is that when the Lions brought up a grievance, and obviously Twitter and everybody else that went back and looked at the game, but when the Lions filed a grievance with the NFL, basically the NFL told them, sorry, not sorry. Like, to me, it was a disrespectful way to handle the situation. And part of the reason why I think the NFL is just a shit league, man. I mean, I support it in a sense because I bet on it, but I like football, and it's the only thing I have for football. That's the only reason why I watch it. If I had an alternative, like if you could give me college football on Sundays, I probably wouldn't watch the NFL. A lot of the games are frustrating because of the lack of consistency in officiating, and just it seems like the NFL just doesn't care. I mean, I can even go a step further, and all 22s didn't become available to NFL Game Pass people until fucking week four. That's disgusting. It's like a $100 product, and you waited 4 weeks to fix a problem with the system that you knew about back in the spring. It's just that type of arrogance from the league, man. It just annoys me. And to me, it spills over on the field. Like, you shouldn't be missing something like that, man. You really shouldn't.
All right, so obviously I will not defend the league at all on the all 22. I'm pretty lost on how a $1 billion industry can't figure that out.
Yeah.
But I will say I'm with the league. I'm not going to apologize after you allowed a team to convert a 4th and 19 and get into field goal range. Like, I'm sorry. That's, if it had been like a 4th and 2 and that they're at midfield and they converted, it's like, all right, you get an apology. No, you give up a 36-yard pass on 4th and 19, you don't get the apology.
Maybe if they throw the flag, they would have gotten a better defensive set. You never know.
But they should have had it already. 4th and 19, like, come on.
You're right.
Be better. Be better, you're Detroit. Right.
And then he made a 66-yard field goal. That's even worse. Like, he literally kicked the longest field goal ever.
Yeah, as a fan, I appreciate them missing it because that was amazing to watch.
It was. All right, so we will be back next week. As always, I'm going to plug my show. I need to actually plug these earlier in the show, too. If you haven't listened to Joe and Keith's Daily Fantasy Podcast, you need to. They've been putting out some gems. Obviously, the Justin Field thing was not a gem, but everything else was a winner. And if you want to see how well it works, join their daily fantasy competition during the week that they do every Sunday, and put your lineup against theirs and so forth. So also, my weekly podcast on gambling will come out, as always, early Thursday morning. It was a good week last week, 6-3 on the picks I gave out. But overall, it's just some good information for people to kind of share. I have noticed that we've got about 40 to 50 consistent listeners on the podcast. Obviously, Dalton posts his winnings every week. Nobody posts winnings for my picks, but hell, I post stuff. So, I mean, somebody's out there is winning. I've got 3 people subscribed to the NFL gambling, and we are 62% on the season, which is pretty damn good.
Yeah, take that.
So, somebody out there is winning, but also You Got a Minute, fam, is going to be dropping tomorrow, as well as the Sunday show and our college football show will be on this Thursday. A lot of good games this week for college football heads, and we're getting closer to when the committee is going to start putting out their ranking. So a lot going on in the group. Joe, as always, thank you for joining me. I just want, before we leave, I just want to hear you say Josh Allen is the greatest.
Josh Allen is the greatest when he plays the Washington football team.
If he played the Giants, he'd drop buckets on y'all.
Oh, God, it would be awful. No, you're right. He would be the greatest against us for sure.
All right, man. Catch you next week.
Later. Thank you.